Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's June 18th, 57 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, and Heber City reporting 55 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we move throughout our Thursday as we inch closer and closer to the weekend. Thursday will feature lots of sunshine out there as high pressure gets a little closer to the area. We'll see those temperatures climbing into the low 80s for us in Park City with that high pressure and lots of sunshine. We'll see temperatures climbing into the upper 80s to right around 90 degrees for us in the Heber Valley as we go throughout your Thursday afternoon. Now, as we move into your Friday, we're going to start to notice winds picking up as high pressure slides to our south and east. That'll give us that return flow out of the south and west, and a low pressure will be trying to approach from the west. So that'll give us a squeeze play. Look for gusty southwesterly winds between 15 to 25 miles per hour, but we could see some gusts at times up to 40 miles per hour. So that's going to lead to that elevated fire danger threat. So be careful if you're going to be recreating on your Friday, or your Juneteenth, actually, for you as you go throughout the afternoon hours. Heading into the upcoming weekend, well, it's a busy weekend with Father's Day weekend and, of course, the summer solstice, which also kicks off on Sunday, the first official day of summer. Well, it's going to be summer-like heading through the weekend. Lots of sunshine expected for your Saturday and Sunday. Now, Saturday, we'll have a few extra clouds that'll pop up in the afternoon, and we can't even rule out an isolated high base mountain shower or two popping up on Saturday with that low pressure moving by to our north. Right now, it doesn't look like it's going to produce a lot of rainfall for us. I wouldn't even worry too much about rain, more so gusty winds and lightning from any of those isolated showers that could try to develop. But it's a possibility Saturday afternoon, so keep an eye to the sky just in case if you're out and about, particularly for that lightning threat. Temperatures will climb to around 80 degrees for a high for your Saturday in Park City. We should climb into the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. For your Father's Day itself, temperatures near 80 on your Sunday in Park City with mostly sunny skies expected. We'll see temperatures around 90 in the Heber Valley for your Father's Day. And then heading into next week, more sunshine, more high pressure, and a warming trend. Highs around 90 in Park City with mid-90s for the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson. Later on, Park City Superintendent of Schools Lindsay Huntsman will be calling in. Board Vice President Nick Hill joining us here in studio, recapping Tuesday's meeting. And finally, the Director of Sailing for Park City Sailing, Scott Firmaris, and Head Coach and Sailing School Director Rosie Chapman with details about this summer's sailing season and how you can participate. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include acclaimed scientist Václav Smil, exploring humanity's relentless pursuit of speed, how it shaped everything from evolution and technology to transportation, efficiency, and modern life itself. Then imagine asking one question and instantly getting everything you need to know about a town, from road conditions and restaurants to events and hidden gems. AI is creating a new digital front door for communities. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, heard, of course, every Thursday at 9 a.m. Taking a look at some local news now, Park City area nonprofits see the Dakota Pacific development as an opportunity for cheaper rent in Kimball Junction. KPCW's Connor Thomas has details on the efforts to create a nonprofit hub.
Park City Community Foundation President and CEO Joel Zero says his dream is to create a, quote, kiln for nonprofits, a nod to the upscale co-working brand.
So a shared workspace, there might be some anchor tenants, but not every nonprofit in our community needs 5 days of space. They can't afford market rate rent. They need some stability so they can secure their future.
That future could be on land to be developed by Six Ridge Partners, formerly Dakota Pacific Real Estate in Western Kimball Junction. Six Ridge has asked Summit County Manager Shane Scott to amend its development agreement with the county to make it happen. Expanding the footprint would also allow for a new Kimball Arts Center and Park City Visitors Center. Before he signs off, Scott organized an open house to share the plans publicly at the Kimball Junction Library Tuesday evening. It was attended mostly by government, nonprofit, or business insiders. Nonprofit leaders at the event told KPCW people in their sector have been talking behind the scenes for years about creating a shared hub. Chris Campbell, who works with the Mountain Mediation Center and Summit Pride, says he has an email list with 58 people interested in the possibility.
But because all these building things are happening already, it's kind of accelerating the pace of some of these discussions. So.
The Utah Nonprofits Association says there were 412 nonprofits registered in Summit County as of 2024. Park City's Bonanza Park neighborhood used to have a co-working space for nonprofits, founded around the time of the 2008 global financial crisis. Longtime local nonprofit professional Shelley Gilwald says landowner Mark Fisher provided a basement at a, quote, nominal rate. The office, with its shared conference room, was a boon for nonprofits at a time when Gilwald says fundraising was difficult.
That we weren't having to pay for overhead when we were, working hard to continue to fund our operations. The other thing is that it was collaborative, and it was great to be able to pick the brains of other executive directors, whether it was shared resources, sometimes shared volunteers.
Zero thinks a space in Kimball Junction could recreate that collaborative spirit. He says PCCF has no plans to relocate its Prospector headquarters, at least not for the next 2 years.
You know, it's way too early to say whether we're moving anywhere or not. We haven't been talking numbers yet. We just want the opportunity to explore. And that's what this is.
He also couldn't say yet whether the Community Foundation would own the co-working space, although it would likely be one of the anchor tenants. The hub's tentative location is on the plaza, slated to replace the Kimball Junction Library atop an underground parking garage. The new Kimball Arts Center would be on Tech Center Drive, directly west of the former Skullcandy headquarters, which will house the library and other government services. Six Ridge CEO Mark Stanworth says his company has been having conversations with Kimball Arts leadership on and off over the last several years.
But so that was kind of the first domino in all of this. So quickly after we kind of got through the approvals, they reached back out and said, yeah, can we talk again about trying to get something done? And we worked very quickly with them, said, absolutely, we'd love to have you here.
He says construction on the 50-acre mixed-use development may begin later this year or in the spring of 2027. Scott, the county manager, told KPCW after Tuesday's open house he would approve changes to Six Ridge's development agreement within about a week. The proposed amendment would add 50,000 extra square feet of commercial space, 30,000 for the Kimball Arts Center, 10,000 for a nonprofit hub, and another 10,000 for a new visitor center. The state law that rezoned the area to allow the long-contested development gives the county manager the power to amend the agreement, not the Summit County Council. Summit County, the Kimball Arts Center, and Park City Community Foundation are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap of the meeting, I have Councilmember Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
So the county announced a couple of weeks ago its decision to purchase about 25 acres of what was proposed to be that Highland Flat development. But the county only purchased the property owned by the Catholic diocese. Why not the entire parcel?
Well, because it wasn't for sale. I guess it's a simple answer. We bought the piece that was for sale. I might add that it was incorrectly reported that we paid $3 million for it. It was actually $3,500,000.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that correction. There is a sign up, though, for sale. So I'm just kind of curious. Maybe that was the one for the Catholic diocese. I don't think so. I think it was for the other parcel. Did you even reach out to the other landowners?
No, we didn't. I can't exactly remember how it came down, but this one was more in play. The other one maybe as well, and it wouldn't hurt to have both of them. This is the only one we've purchased today.
All right. Moving on to the meeting, Basin Recreation District Director Robert Parrish gave the council an update on its future facilities last night. This is based on some surveying that they had done. So will Basin Rec put a bond on the ballot this fall?
Well, they're leaning into it, Leslie. This is the last afternoon's meeting is one in a series of trying to gauge the county council's interest and whether we think the public would support taxing themselves for an additional bond. The proposal last night talked about a two-site plan where there would be facilities built both at what they called in the proposal Jeremy Ranch, which is the Klein Dolly property, as well as over at Silver Creek Village, where Basin Rec has quite a footprint already of vacant land. And so we'll learn more. I think it's on the 8th of July when they're coming back to take the next step and provide more information as to how much a bond might be, what these facilities might cost. Yesterday's meeting was more of a introduction and to share with us their latest thinking based on the survey results of what they might put at each site.
So given that that Klein Dolly parcel is owned by Summit County, I guess, how do you make sure that that project there would happen so that voters would have some certainty if they were to vote on a bond?
The Klein Dolly property is about 29 acres, and there's a portion of it that I'm going to just say about half of it or maybe a little more. Well, there's some of it that's more open space anyway along East Canyon Creek, but the idea is there'd be a subdivision plat created that would separate off the Columbus Pacific piece, joint venture, public-private partnership with the county, that land, and there would be a buildable parcel for Basin Rec. And, of course, we're working hard to try to bring that project together, and it would have to, they'd have to go hand in hand. But the bond wouldn't be on the ballot until, I don't think it's, they're looking at this year. It'd be next year at the earliest. So there should be ample time to bring the Klein Dolly project to fruition or to some kind of a final agreement that would assure it's going forward.
Hmm. So could a field house, though, be built there without all of the housing that's also proposed by Columbus Pacific's application?
Yes. I mean, the site that's been in the concept plan that's been set aside for Basin Rec is one that fits in well with having surrounding development around it, but you know, it's a nice piece of property. Yeah, you could build a field house anywhere you wanted on the developable part of it. Mm. But I think we like the Columbus Pacific plan and think that the field house there is another good addition to it.
So at this point, is there any ballpark amount for a bond? I don't think Robert Parrish had a number.
No, he was a little demure on that topic. He said, wait till July. He said he had a number, but he didn't think he should share it.
All right. Surprise factor here. So are we talking about one bond or a couple of bonds for a couple of facilities?
I think it would likely be one bond. There's efficiencies in terms of cost of issuance. And they did say last night that the bond would be likely structured such that it might be interest only or something on the front end, such that the full payments might go to defray existing debt. And once that was defrayed, it would be more amortizing more principal. They had a strategy to limit the impact on the taxpayer, as some of our other bonds at Basin Rec are waning.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about what some of the facilities are being talked about or contemplated here.
Well, I think they were talking about at the Jeremy Ranch site, a climbing wall, and there was talk about wanting at least 3,500 square feet. I wasn't sure whether that was wall square footage or floor square footage, but I forgot to ask that question. But 40-foot high, you know, a first-class climbing area. They wanted the swimming, additional swimming over at, the survey did, over at Silver Creek. There was additional weight training and additional courts, I think, at both locations, as well as locations as well as some indoor field space. I think the plan was about 64,000 square feet at Jeremy Ranch, and I can't remember the size over at Sylvan Creek.
All right. I think it was even bigger than that. There was also, I know, support for a climbing wall, but with the caveat, if you don't do it right, just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the nice things about the Klein Dolly side is, as you know, it slopes from the interstate down to East Canyon Creek. And so by putting the field house farther north, you can have a tall climbing wall, do it right, as you say, or as they said, and not have it look like a watchtower.
All right.
You know, you can work with the grades.
The county council talked about a future bond last December when Basin Recreation was seeking a tax increase. The council, however, as it turned out, there was a lesser tax hike than that the district originally wanted. So talk to me a little bit about, take us back to that and why we didn't allow the higher tax increase.
Well, I think that our taxpayers have felt like that we have had a lot of increases, our property taxpayers. And that's one of the issues that we brought up then was, you know, you want this big tax increase, and the next thing you know, you're going to want a bond. I mean, we kind of knew that. It was a leading question, but they've been contemplating additional facilities for a long time. Basin Rec indicated last night that there's some 4,600 new residences that likely come on in the next 10 years, and that we need more facilities, and so I get that. But we paired them back to a lesser tax increase last year. You know, they said last night, their argument is Summit County has one of the lowest tax rates in the state, and that's true. But we have also very high valuations, and so the total dollars that somebody spends, it may be a low rate times a high value, still a lot of money. And so anyway, it's a sensitive issue. The Basin Rec's going to have to make the case to the public that this is in its interest to pass this bond.
All right.
That's bottom line.
Are you a user of the Basin Rec facilities?
Not since this morning.
Okay. But so what's your experience?
Are they
overcrowded?
Leslie, I have I go over there every morning at 6 a.m. to a high-intensity interval training class out in the field, and it's not overcrowded. I don't spend a lot of time upstairs in the weights and or in much of the rest of it. For me, it works terrifically, and it's a big part of my life, keeping me alive. But I don't see the other side of it. I'm there early, and it's not, and with a specific mission.
Okay, moving on, the council also filled out the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission roster. You interviewed five applicants for two vacancies. Who did you select?
We selected Terry Diston and John Olive, I think, is the last name. And we had two of the applicants that were disqualified due to our having already achieved the number of municipal residents that can serve, in other words, residents within the cities that can serve on the commission. So we had three candidates, and we chose two of them. We interviewed three and chose two.
All right. Recently, Planning Commissioner David Darcy raised the idea of a data center in Eastern Summit County. We don't have any rules or regulations for that now. KUER reporting that other counties in Utah are putting moratoriums in place to allow time to draft those regulations in light of Box Elder County's experience. So what about Summit County? Is there any push to draft some data center regulations?
You know, I've been thinking that same thing. I read the papers, and I've followed Box Elder and followed the one down in Beaver, and one in Uinta County, Wyoming, was approved yesterday by the Uinta County Commission, just east of Randolph, Utah. I think we probably do, and we don't have like in Box Elder County unzoned portions of the county. We have we've been zoned since 1977, but we probably ought to do that. I know it's come up at the Utah Association of Counties, and we actually have a half-day seminar in a week or so on best practices for evaluating and entitling data centers or not. But it's probably a good idea. I'm not, you know, there's a lot of other things that make our county less suitable for that, but never say it won't happen, right?
Yeah, well, less suitable being just the high property values, huh?
Well, yeah, and I think the climate and topography, I mean, I'm no expert, but I guess if you can do one in Evanston or Uinta, you could do one in our county.
Okay. Finally, the restaurant tax grant, the council reconsidered but did not make a decision about a grant for the North Summit Recreation District. That was, again, with restaurant tax money, and those grants were approved last week. So why didn't North Summit Rec get a grant last week?
Well, the committee that helps recommend or that recommends to us grants out of the restaurant tax viewed that because they weren't in a position to fund the whole thing, and the purpose for the grant was to give North Summit Rec, or the request for the grant was to give North Summit Rec money to complete lighting for their fields. The total cost of the project was like $456,000, of which they were seeking some $327,000 in the grant. The committee couldn't come up with $327,000. And they thought giving something less.
So
then they just denied them in total, and then we reconsidered it. And our plan is, it wasn't styled on the agenda yesterday for approval. It was a discussion for reconsideration. We have formally said we'll reconsider it at our next meeting, and I'm in favor of using part of our surplus from restaurant tax. We keep 10% of it in reserve. We have some $4 million. I'm in favor of giving them that to get that lighting done.
Okay, so if you did approve, it wouldn't affect any other restaurant tax applicants then? It would come
correct. It does. We authorized the committee to allocate the 90% portion of the collections, keeping 10% in abeyance. They allocated all but $70,000 of the 90. And so 70 wouldn't have done North Summit Rec any good. So, and we would have had to have opened it up, the competitive process up again to everybody if we wanted to use some of the 90. So if we do anything, it'll be out of our 10%.
Okay. I got to leave it there. Chris, anything else you wanted to add?
Nope. Thanks a lot, Leslie. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Board of Education met Tuesday to approve next year's budget. Also getting a construction update, and in the studio to recap the meeting, I have the School Board Vice President Nick Hell on the phone with me. I have the Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There you are. Okay, so let's start here with the Department of Environmental Response and Remediation, in coordination with the EPA, denied the school district's request for a bevel exemption on some soil piles on the Treasure Mountain Junior High School construction site. This exemption would have allowed the school district to temporarily keep some more contaminated soil on site. So why was it denied?
So point of clarification, it was not denied. We actually received the bevel exemption, and this exemption allows us to relocate the soil pile that failed the T-clip test off-site at a significantly reduced cost.
So there's just one pile that doesn't meet the T-clip requirements?
Correct. So per the regulatory requirements, only one specific soil stockpile was required to be recovered because it didn't meet the T-clip test. The covering of the remaining piles was executed as a proactive best practice measure. And furthermore, I believe it should be noted that the TCLIP exceedance did not apply to the entirety of that affected stockpile. It was just confined to isolated sections within it.
So the Bevel exemption pretty much allows you to just to drop this toxic soil into any landfill. Where is it going to go?
It is going to go south of Provo in Fairfield. We actually received an approval letter from that facility prior to receiving the Bevel exemption.
So is there a specific deadline by which the district has to remove the soil that doesn't meet the TCLIP requirements?
Yeah, so DIR was actually on site yesterday, and they're going to provide us with a summary of that visit, and then we'll finalize next steps. Once we have that summary, then we'll provide a schedule to expedite the removal of that stockpiled soil. We anticipate the soil will be off site within the next 2 to 3 weeks, if not sooner.
Okay, and as we know now, the soil does qualify as hazardous waste by federal standards. It has been sitting at the site for months, partially covered. I've seen some video of dust just blowing it, you know, towards the homes there in Prospector, towards McPolin Elementary. And I guess the narrative that's been spun here for months is that no rules have been broken. But, I mean, that's basically, I mean, BS, because in light of the EPA's determination it is toxic and it is dangerous. And what we have been told by you and board members for months on end is that we don't need to be worried. But should we be?
We've been closely monitoring air quality on that site. Daily tests are submitted. And as of today, we have never received a test that has exceeded any threshold that would be deemed unhealthy.
Yeah, Leslie, I think it's important to note that we've had, our environmental consultants, our partners at the state involved all along with this. And, you know, is the public right to be concerned about toxic soils? Of course they are. But we also know that toxic soils are present throughout this community. And it is not possible to do any level of construction on that site or in most of this community without handling those. So we have put everything we could in place to make sure that we handle soils appropriately and that things are tested. And as Lindsay said, we've been testing the air quality throughout that site constantly since we began that construction.
Okay, but with the publication of the Town Lift story earlier this week, I mean, we have been told again by the district and by board members that everything has been handled in compliance with the law. And again, that's not the case. I mean, you have told us that you could keep the soil on site, even though the covenant that we refer back to many times says that you could not. I mean, that covenant language is very clear. Soil that exceeds the levels accepted in the TCLIP test has to be moved off site. So I guess, Lindsay, I mean, why did the district think that it could handle this outside the covenant rules?
I'll go back to what Nick said, right? We have an environmental consultant on site. We've been working hand in hand with DEQ, who also reports to EPA, and everything that has been done on that site has come at their recommendation.
So how much does this add to the total cost? You said it was going to be reduced because you're going to be able to take it to that landfill in near Provo.
Yeah, so there's no additional cost due to the history of the site. We built contingency funds into the budget specifically in the event we ran into unforeseen scenarios. We knew that going in there would be a possibility we'd encounter contaminated soil that may or may not require special handling. And that's just the nature of construction on a site with this background.
So for anybody who might walk by where those piles are stored, you will see piles with plastic covering on some of them. Is the one in question, the most dangerous one, is that in fact totally covered and safe and being watered down?
It is covered. And I believe if you walk past there now, many of those piles have been moved and excavated to start creating a berm around the back of the baseball and softball field. So those piles have been significantly reduced over the course of the last couple of days.
Okay. And that the soil that does meet those T-clip thresholds will stay on site. When do you expect those to be buried?
We anticipate then in the next couple of weeks that will occur. My hope is that it'll be sooner than that.
Okay. Any other construction updates? It seems like there's a lot of construction or a lot of activity happening in the Park City High School parking lot. I guess that's for the Dozier Field improvements?
Yes, there's actually a lot of positive progress to report for Dozier. They're currently grading the track and hopefully will begin forming it next week with the goal of pouring the new track in one shot. They're targeting end of June for completion of that. The west side home bleachers are almost complete inside, and the precast is scheduled for next week from the east side. Buildings on the east side have tile going in, the ceilings are done, fixtures are in, and they've been painted. So we expect that to be delivered mid to late July. So lots of positive progress on Dozier. Our first home game is August 28th for football, and our fingers are crossed it'll be ready to go.
Okay, and then what about the Treasure Mountain sports complex?
Yeah, so Treasure Mountain, you've seen them start grading the soccer fields. The only thing that we may not be able to deliver by August is the tennis courts, and as well as the parking lot. There will be a new parking lot over there, but they will continue to work on that. But we anticipate all the other projects over there to be complete by the time school starts.
All right. Tuesday, the school board passed the fiscal year 2027 budget. How is that budget playing out alongside with the ongoing construction?
The board adopted the fiscal year 27 budget, so we have a clear and approved financial plan heading into the new school year. Construction is funded through separate capital channels from our operating budget, but we're managing both of those simultaneously. The soil situation at Treasure is a good example of the kind of contingency planning we do. We have the funding set aside specifically for that scenario based on the history of that site.
And once again, the district experiencing another decrease in enrollment. I believe you heard it was estimated to be about 55 students. If we hadn't allowed the schools to be open, any idea how many more would we would be down?
Yeah, if you think you've looked at the trend over the last couple of years prior to open enrollment occurring, since 2016, we've been in declining enrollment. We average anywhere between 75 to 100 students, decreasing that by each year. But we account for these enrollment trends carefully during budget development. This trend is actually based on several years of data. And with open enrollment being in its infancy, we're not certain we'll actually realize the decrease of 55 students. But we won't know until that October 1 count occurs.
Right. Any idea how that affects the budget, though, losing students every year?
We take that into account as we build that budget because we're looking at historical trends. So we're prepared in the event that number increases or decreases as we build that budget.
And we'll continue to be intentional about open enrollment and trying to fill classes where we have space. We do know that there is a bubble at the secondary levels, and you know we'll continue to plan for that going forward and try and make sure that we have as many students in seats as possible without affecting staffing and going beyond what we have currently.
All right. You heard from the YMCA for Northern Utah CEO along with Mercy Housing sharing a presentation on possible partnering with the school district to build affordable housing. Where did this conversation come from?
It grew very organically, just out of existing relationships with the YMCA. As you heard, Rich state, they've been partnering with us for several years now. They operate a summer camp in Park City, and the district has been supporting that by making space available to them. So Rich lives in the community, and he's been listening to what the community needs, whether it be affordable housing, preschool, early childhood education, after-school programming, year-round athletic and recreation space. So it's just a conversation of, is this a possibility? And if so, what does it look like?
So are we talking about the property that the school district owns near Silver Summit?
It's the 55 acres over in Trailside.
Right. Okay. Yeah, just off of Highland Drive there.
Yeah, that's essentially correct. Yeah.
Okay. I guess, Nick, how interested is the school board moving forward with this kind of partnership?
Yeah, I think genuinely interested. I think that, this conversation specifically grew fairly organically, as Lindsay said. But we have been talking about what to do with land that we own for some time, certainly several years at this point. We have an opportunity with a couple of very experienced partners to think about what is possible and what we might do. Very conceptual at this stage, certainly nothing confirmed, nothing specific even outlined. So just, as I said, very conceptual conversation, but the board, I think, is very interested in what we may be able to do to support community needs in that space that we own.
So no ballpark density numbers at this point?
No.
All right. What is the property zone for? I mean, how many units could you build if you wanted to build there?
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to. As we stated, this is very early on. No decision has been made. It was just an idea that was brought forth, and we wanted to have conversation with Mercy Housing and YMCA about what it might entail.
So when does this come back with more, more detail?
To be determined. There's no timeline or next step at this point. We need to have some internal dialogue about our needs as well as balancing that with the wants and needs of our community.
Yeah, okay. And I think it really is important to note that, it is conceptual at this stage, and anything we do will be subject to, ongoing community conversations and discussions around what is wanted and needed and what's possible on that side.
All right, Nick, the school board renewed Lindsay and business administrator Randy Upton's employment contracts for an additional 2 years during the meeting. I'm assuming that includes salary increases?
Small salary increases on those contracts, yes.
What are we talking about? The contract just says the salary is 24% above the top step and lane on the.
That's right. It's linked to the existing salary schedule. I believe the increase was 1 or 2%.
Okay. Do you know, Lindsay, since it was your contract?
Yeah. So it was 2%, so you would say, okay, our employees got 3%, so I believe there's another 2% to that.
Okay, and finally wanted to the board once again hit pause on changing the Friday early release times for next year as families are split after filling out a survey. So why is the district considering changing Friday release times for the middle and elementary schools?
Yeah, so the district already has a Friday early release, and this conversation was specifically about adjusting those release times further, primarily for elementary and middle school students, to give our teachers more dedicated and consistent collaboration time. As of now, there's a significant gap of when our elementary students release and our Ecker Hill students release. So we're trying to streamline that. For a variety of reasons, transportation being one, so our drivers aren't essentially waiting for Ecker Hill to be released. And then one of the themes that emerged as we did a listening tour at each school site this year was our staff needs more time, and this was a way to give them more time, especially on Fridays, since that was a structure that already existed.
Okay, so with this on pause, is it likely to change before the school year starts?
No. The board made the right call by pausing rather than moving forward at Tuesday's meeting. The survey gave us a nuanced picture. This isn't a situation where the community is clearly voting in one direction. If you looked at the results, 63% supported for our middle school, but it was an even split with our elementary family. So we're going to press pause for the 26-27 school year, study this a little more, engage our families, so no decision would be made until later in the 26-27 school year, and it wouldn't go into effect until school year 27-28.
Okay, I've got to leave it there. Lindsay Huntsman, Nick Hill, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, it's sailing season, and Park City Sailing has a number of offerings. In the studio with details is the director of sailing, Scott Vermeeris, along with the head coach and sailing school director, Rosie Chapman, joining us by phone. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Rosie, are you still there?
Good morning. Okay. Yes, I am. Sorry, I was muted.
Okay. Scott, maybe just start by just telling us a little bit about Park City Sailing, who you are and what you do.
Yeah, Park City Sailing has been around for around 17 years or so. We are a nonprofit community sailing center. We're aimed to offer sailing to the community, making it affordable and accessible. We offer education and programming for all ages. And yeah, we want people to come down and check it out. It's a whole new world down there.
All right, and check it out where?
So we're at the Jordanelle Reservoir, and we have programs during the day as well as in the evenings. And we have an open house this weekend. On Saturday, we'd love people to come check it out. But we are just in the personal watercraft ramp area that faces the dam. And it's just two rights once you enter the park.
Okay. So not only do you have lessons, you also have boats for rent?
We do. We don't rent boats, but we have an access program that allows members to have unlimited access to use boats once they're checked out and we know that they can sail safely. We also have adult lessons that help people get the skills that they need to get out and do that. And then we have a lot of small dinghies for youth sailors and up-and-coming racers to learn on as well. So we've got a lot of different ways for people of different ages to start.
Okay, and so you operate what, June through October or?
Actually, we start spring training. Rosie has athletes out training in the spring as early as April. And then in May, we launch all of the rest of our boats. So we're essentially May through the last day of September.
Okay. Rosie, tell us about yourself. You've been with Park City Sailing. I think this is your first season?
Yeah, this is my first season. I actually moved to Utah in October and started running the program with Scott in, like I said, April. We're on the water.
Yeah, so what's your background in sailing?
My background, a little bit of an interesting journey, but has literally taken me around the world. So originally, as you can tell from my accent, from the UK. And then was on their Olympic development program there as a professional sailor for years and transitioned into coaching. I've lived in Canada, the U.S., New Zealand, all over the world, really.
All right. And I know you've got sailing school for kids as young as five. Is that really? I mean, a five-year-old can sail a boat?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at our five-year-old because they're about to go out on the water. So they go out in our J-22s. They're called the Guppies. And it's amazing. They get to go out and experience just the love of the sport for the first time. We have a sailing instructor with them, and they go on little adventures. They're hoisting a pirate flag today, and they really just start to understand what the sport is about. After they finish Guppies, they go into the pram. And from the pram, they start sailing just with two people in a boat and then go out on their own. So yesterday, we had some kids out. It was very breezy, and their first week, and they're ripping around already on their own in the boat. It's kind of that real sense of independence they get to feel for the first time as early as like 5 to 7.
Okay. You take kids all the way up to 17?
Yeah. So we have a race team and they go up to like 17, 18 before they go to college. So my goal is to transition them all the way through that to be youth sailors and then on to collegiate sailing.
Yeah. How many participants do you have in the sailing school?
We run through about 200 to 300 a summer and then kind of look to have returning and then capture these kids so they stay in the sport. So some of them have been with me since April. They're here for the 10 weeks and they'll stay sailing with me all the way through to the fall and we'll do some winter regattas.
Okay. And Scott, can you talk a little bit about just the pricing for something like that?
Yeah, so sailing school is around $159 per day. So compared to other camps, we consider it a pretty good price considering what you're getting and the experience and the equipment that it involves in safety. That's about $795 per week. We do offer scholarships, and we're very, very open as a nonprofit and eager to try to support people that would like to apply for scholarships. For adults, lessons, you can either do a private lesson for around $300, or you can do a four-pack of group lessons for about $500. So $300, $500 for lessons. The access program is unlimited boat access for the entire season. We try to make that an easy pathway. We don't try to create unnecessary obstacles to being able to sail on your own. That's a little under $1,000. And there's a lot of free things we offer too. We do free clinics and social events that don't cost money. We have a lot of ways we want to draw the community in and show that this is a great place for people that have sailed before, but also might want to just learn for the first time. It's such an awesome form of recreation that we have right at our fingertips.
Yeah. What kind of sailing conditions are on the Jordanelle?
Okay, so yeah, we get a southerly breeze that comes over the Heber Valley over our dam. That's our prevailing wind. It's about 60% of the time. The rest of the time, it comes from the north. We also get really good daytime thermals that we're known for. So we have this like thermal pump system where wind comes up the Provo Canyon over Heber Valley, gets pulled over our lake, and it's all just about a temperature differential. So we get really good afternoon winds. So we have a surprisingly good sailing venue for being in a mountain town.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You also have women-specific programs?
Yeah. So on Wednesday evenings, we have a Women in Wind program. It's part education, part social. And it's women meeting other women and getting out and either getting to a boat for the first time or coming out and teaching other women what they already know.
All right. And then you mentioned with the boat access program, what do you have to show to be able to use a boat?
Yeah, you need to be able to operate the boat safely so that you are safe and that the boat itself is safe. We're acknowledging the fact that a lot of people are getting into that program to continue practicing. So you don't need to be, a master mariner or a super experienced sailor. You just need to be safe enough to go out and choose the right conditions to practice in. You need to be able to get off the mooring ball, return to the mooring ball safely, and execute tacks and jibes and know how to rig the boat. We have lessons geared towards getting people to that point so they can be independent. And we'll just do a quick checkout. A lot of times, like yesterday, I had someone do a private lesson, and by the end of that, I said, okay, you're checked out. The boat's still reserved. Do you want to keep it for another hour? And they just went sailing on their own. He came back all smiles. So,
okay. Mention you do have some upcoming public events. Tell us about those.
Yes. So this weekend we have Summer Sailstice. It's a global celebration of sailing that people and different organizations celebrate around the world around the summer solstice. And so ours is going to be on Saturday from 11 to 3. This is a free event with a food truck and boat rides and a great way to meet members and other people that run the program and learn about different things that we have, different offerings and how to get involved.
Okay, and what else do you have coming up?
Yeah, so this summer we have a list of fun regattas that you can check out on our website, but the other one I want to mention is a new event that I came up with called the Jordan Elbow Regatta. The Jordanelle is shaped as like an arm and elbow, so we're going to race around the whole lake, and this is the regatta for everyone. So this is any of our junior sailors can come use one of our boats. Adults can, charter one of, take one of our boats, bring their own boats. This is for people in the community that have boats and maybe don't sail with us. The catamaran people from Rockport, anybody, Salt Lake, anybody around is welcome to bring their boat. It's free, and we're going to race around the lake. There'll be awards, costumes, and this is just a fun event with some traditional sailing as well as some non-traditional parade around the lake type stuff with a huge party after, and I blocked off some campsites as well.
So when is that?
That is August 1st. So we want to really have a big one there and invite everybody out for that as well. It's something where we want to be really inclusive. Sailing is something that anybody can do, and we want to get people down there and know that you don't have to pay a lot of money to be involved, and there's a lot of cool things you can experience.
Okay, and then you're also going to be doing some after race dinners?
Yeah, so that's something that has typically been, like, operate race dinners have been mainly for the racers, but we're trying to improve that, and we're in the process of, well, we've already done that. We've got food trucks some of the nights on Tuesdays and Thursdays, as well as we're doing our own barbecues with better food than in the past. We want to invite people, even if they're not racing, to come meet people and join us. So that's around 8 p.m. after the races are over on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings.
Okay. More information is where?
Sailpc.org.
Okay, and how did you find Rosie? Sounds like she was a score.
Oh, Rosie's amazing. Yeah, she came to us. She was the Olympic Development Director at U.S. Sailing. She's been coaching and developing Olympians and running national programs. And Rosie reached out to us, was open to do something new, and we were like, wow, yes, let's talk. And here we are.
Okay.
It's been incredible.
All right. Well, welcome, Rosie, and yeah, have fun out there on the lake.
Thank you.
Okay. Scott, anything else you want to mention?
I just want to remind people how easy it is to get down to the Jordanelle. It's so close, and it's really easy to get out sailing. It's to get involved. I mean, we have adult lessons, Women to Win, boat access, sailing school, racing. Call us up, email, but it's just around the corner. It's so easy. It's when you get down there, it's magical. It's like, sometimes I'm like, do people realize this is in a ski town? We have this right here. So it doesn't matter your experience, come get it.
Okay, just need an annual state park. That's the way to do it, to get in and out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I also want to mention that we do a lot of therapeutic work with veterans, and we're doing a lot of work when we can with the NAC. We have adaptive sailing programs. We're ready to set up private lessons for any ability type. So, yeah, there's just a lot of magical things we can share with all people. It's really cool. So, okay. Thank you.
All right, Scott and Rosie, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.